In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Past guest Matthew Deleuze went into detail about how the collective human energy is often harvested during public events on sacred dates, such as the Olympics, the Super Bowl, and large concerts. We know from the work of past guest Peter Shampoo that the stadiums and arenas are mainly located on large energy bandwidths. We take a look at a very old dark magic that continues to be used for programming the mind through television, video games, and other visual entertainment. Watching television has been described as dreaming with your eyes open. In this hypnotic state, the subconscious is open to suggestive images, complex symbols, harmonics, and according to our guests, much more. Bonnie Jean Mitchell and John Mitchell have produced a very insightful video titled Global Epidemic Exposed, Television Sigil Magic, describing how mnemonic circles and sigils are used in television graphics to put the viewer into a trance. Bonnie and John explain how the use of the Key of Solomon is a main magical grimoire, specifically the lesser key of Solomon that calls demons to their bidding. This show aired 5 years ago, and Bonnie and John's video link can still be found at awakenvideo.org. It's unfortunate for some to be woken from the slumber of mass hypnosis and find that your favorite movies or television shows were embedded with demonic symbols and psychic manipulation. This connects into the recent past shows with Kent Bain and revealing the cryptic language of false flag events carefully woven into media scripts. Michael Tessarian, an Irish author of many books including Atlantis, Alien Visitation, and Genetic Manipulation, wrote an article titled Symbolic Literacy that Kent Bain refers to in the most dangerous book in the world, 9/11 as a Mass Ritual. Here's part of that article. Due to chronic symbolic illiteracy, we live our lives largely unaware of a great poison in our midst, something that has profoundly negative effects on our conscious and unconscious selves. This is the use of a subliminal persuasion in media and advertising. Subliminal and subtextual persuasion of this pernicious kind constitutes nothing less than a psychic dictatorship. It involves the deliberate and subversive manipulation and public purveyance of words, images, numbers, colors, rhythms, and symbols, which are subsequently directed via ubiquitous media oracles toward the limbic areas of the human brain. The artifice of the media persuaders produce an elaborate and insidious cryptic language, specifically designed to stimulate conflict between fantasy and reality. It also serves to stimulate the compulsive urge of man's base appetites and a plethora of mundane and dissonant drives that conflict with higher aspirations and intentions. Constant exposure to subliminal content serves to undermine the healthy drives of humans. It subverts our natural moral sensibility and ultimately arrests our spiritual maturation. The devastating effects of such subversion on ourselves as well as on our children has rarely been explored in great depth. It has yet to be recognized by the public at large who, being victims of chronic symbol illiteracy, are unshielded against the constant barrage of subliminal information entering their minds, causing, over time, a nightmare list of physical and psychic disorders. In the mind of this author, there can be no question of positive social change, no question of national or global healing, until human beings, specifically those in the Western world, become lucidly cognizant and profoundly educated concerning the power of symbols, not only as transcendental portals or mathematical devices, but as weapons in the hands of plutocratic elites with occult agendas, laboring to arrest the mental, emotional, and spiritual maturation of the underclass. The alarming existential chaos which the young presently experience, mostly deplored and ignored, serves as a direct indictment of the symbolic subversion I seek to expose. The young are, by definition, closer to the creative force than the average adult. They are also more influenced by the limbic brain, and therefore respond with greater zeal to the erotic and even perverse symbolic messages which have become increasingly pervasive in our life and think space. The invasive, clandestinely directed content has been adroitly designed to bypass their moral conscience and rational filters. The results of this psychic dictatorship are devastating. Subliminal messages permeate television programs, computer games, magazines, billboards, products, and musical productions. They are, however, not limited to the ambience of the young. They're just one of the weapons in the arsenal of psychopathic corporations whose entire modus operandi concerns profit and dehumanization. All that is truly aesthetic, traditional, cultural, or substantial merely stands in the way of their monopolistic stratagems. Their aggressive, relentless efforts at reducing the entire human race to a body of narcissistic, sense-infatuated, desensitized, amoral, immoral, and actively criminal, quote, smiling depressives. We have technological witch doctors and cyberspace sorcerers. Their particular concoction of spells are cast via techniques that go by names such as telehypnosis, metacontrast, hemisync, synesthesia, and embedding. New techniques, yes, but with the same deadly effect as any past voodoo, sorcery, or telepathy. In fact, the only way to really comprehend the complete ramifications of their insidious work is for each person to become familiar with the manner in which symbols affect the mind. Eventually, the student must also begin to study occult subjects. He must study subjects such as tarot, alchemy, astrology, and astrotheology. By studying the nature of consciousness and how it is affected or disaffected by colors, symbol, numbers, and words, we discover what's going on around us. We're also able to take back the power that was stolen from us. Symbols have been used by all major cultures, and naturally, there could be no true advance to higher forms of language and communication without them. Symbols are higher forms of communication. They transmit archetypal ideas that words are unable to convey. Cynics who continue to doubt whether symbols and images have any lasting effect on consciousness should remember and study the most recent example of mass control, that of Nazi Germany. The Nazis openly used ritual choreography, ancient symbols, and rallying chants, powerful mystical logos and regalia, and so on, to force men into a hive mentality. We now know that Hitler and his cronies were deeply involved with powerful occult societies and were fascinated by ancient mysticism. Hitler sent agents throughout the world to visit tribes in order to procure occult works and doctrines and to learn how to employ magical arts. And here's a quote by Aldous Huxley included, quote, "The 21st century will be the era of the world controllers. The older dictators fell because they could never supply their subjects with enough bread, enough circus, enough miracles and mystery. Under a scientific dictatorship, education will really work. Most men and women will grow up to love their servitude and will never dream of revolution. There seems to be no good reason why a thoroughly scientific dictatorship should ever be overthrown." That's a quote by Aldous Huxley, Brave New World Revisited. And Michael Tesserian continues here, "Tragically, that which man consumes also consumes him, sickened and desperate in his soul and knowing next to nothing about his own essence. He charges back and forth vainly with 1,001 ideas and plans, pathetically administering to the maladies of his equally debilitated neighbors and fellow humans. His mind is plagued with, quote, media viruses, and his libido rages within from all kinds of toxic programming. By divorcing ourselves from our center and losing our once natural sense of interior life, we become a generation who must have, but cannot be, who know what, but not how to think. Persona drives and limbic drives predominate and compel us to live on the periphery of being, on the surface of ourselves. We don't own our own thoughts and yet believe ourselves capable of, quote, independent thought and choice. True thought can be creative, but thoughts can also be created and implanted by agencies that seek to enslave the soul and confound the natural intelligence. Pestilence and injustice ride their steeds through our world, but they go unseen, sowing the seeds of doom among the innocent and pure, within hearts and minds unprotected and without awareness of what's happening to them. The subversive forces that operate as described, and which deal so contemptuously with the underclass they fear, can be sanctioned, penalized, and even overthrown once we return to symbolic literacy that was natural to our forebears. When the, quote, inner eye is open and when pattern recognition becomes as natural as breathing, the tables will be turned on the subversive tyrants." That was an excerpt from Symbolic Literacy, its author, Michael Tesserian. Let's now go to the interview with Bonnie Jean Mitchell and John Mitchell discussing their very insightful video titled "Global Epidemic Exposed: Television Sigil Magic." John and Bonnie, welcome to Another News.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jeff.
Well, how are we as viewers contributing to the agenda of this reality that you've investigated?
Well, Jeff, we are creating this reality. We are, our subconscious minds and our third eyes work together to actually create the reality that we live in. And if you are spending a lot of time in front of the television set and allowing your subconscious mind to be programmed by the Illuminati dark magicians who are doing the programming, then you are manifesting the reality that they want. There is a tiny little group of people who are deciding what everyone else sees on television. The television is a weapon. It's been a weapon from the very beginning. It's a dangerous tool that actually puts you in a trance. And it programs your subconscious mind like it was a computer. So it's easy to do once you're under a state of hypnosis to embed any kind of information they want into your subconscious mind. And because so many people are actually addicted to watching television, I think in the United States the average is 4.5 hours per day for TV watchers. So if you are doing that, you are contributing actually to this dark reality they want to create. And our unified consciousness is helping to manifest this dark world that the Illuminati is looking for.
For people who are a little bit more awake, we'll realize that we see it in the movies and on TV first, and then we see it in reality. And a good viewpoint of that is all the stuff that most people with some type of morals will think that they see, let's say, things going on TV and in the movies where, you know, the women aren't acting right. They're acting, you know, they're dressing really slutty, and, you know, it's like unacceptable to people of that time. But then let's look at our society. They keep ramping that up, these more and more unacceptable levels of sex and violence. But it spills out into our reality, and now we see it. We're seeing, God, what was the last thing we just heard of? Sixth graders sexting each other with cell phones, where they take, sixth graders taking sexual, pictures of themselves and send it to each other. And that's what I mean by this ramping up. And first it's in the movies and the TV, and people with consciousness go, wait, this is totally wrong. But over time, it just keeps getting worse and worse in the society itself, in the so-called real life.
It's really disturbing. And I wanted to ask you, in your research, can you describe what's going on in the brain while you're watching television?
Sure. Well, one of the first things that happens when you sit down and watch the TV is your brain waves change. And it doesn't take very long. It's less than a minute of sitting there watching the TV, and your brain waves change from a beta to an alpha state. Now, beta is the frequency you experience during normal daily activity, you know, going to work or school or the grocery store. And the alpha state is what you experience when you're meditating or in a light trance. However, when you're watching TV and you go into an alpha state, you're definitely not meditating. It's more like a forced trance. And this is just the first thing that happens. There's also the flicker rate, which is about 50 or 60 hertz, which means 50 frames or 60 frames per second. And if you can imagine just sitting at a table and having 50 pictures set down in front of you, and you have to look at each picture and understand it logically, rationally, and understand every picture, but you only have 1 second to do that. That's clearly overwhelming for the conscious mind. The conscious mind can't do that. So it kind of steps aside and allows the subconscious to take over. So that's another thing that happens. Also, there is the rapid succession of scene changes. When I was a kid, I did watch some television, and I remember that it was pretty slow-paced. I mean, you could follow the story as it went along. It slowly went from one scene to another. But now TV and movies are not like that. They are very fast and lots of, you know, action-packed in your face. You can't keep up with it. You're not meant to keep up with it. It's not meant for the conscious mind. It is meant to program the subconscious mind, and this is what they're doing.
And this is a good place to interject, too. Several years ago now, man, now that I think about it, it was about 5 or 6 years ago, Bonnie and I tried to go to one of those IMAX movies, and it was the last movie I think we went to see at the show, actually. It was a one of the versions of the
Transformers,
thank you.
Oh, wow.
And it may, because we don't participate in this, we don't watch TV and we don't go to the movies and all this, we're out of that realm of people who can stand that high frame rate. And it really... You know, we're not like overly sensitive people or anything like that. We don't have a bunch of allergies, that kind of thing. We're strong people and healthy people. But trying to watch that movie made us sick just to even try to, because of the shifting back and forth from scene to scene so fast, it was nauseating. And so that should tell you something. If you're not used to this type of frame rate change and you go to try to watch this stuff, it can't be good for you.
Yeah, it definitely gradually happened over the years, over the decades. It just went faster and faster. So people who always watch TV and movies would just be conditioned to see that. So on the TV, they also use imagery, and the imagery is full of symbols that the conscious mind does not recognize. Once again, is the subconscious that is targeted. And imagery can actually embed commands in your subconscious mind so that later, when you see something or hear something, it can trigger the command that's been put into your brain. Everybody's seen a hypnotist hypnotize someone and tell them, when you wake up, you're going to cluck like a chicken or something like that. And then when you wake up, you cluck like a chicken. It's just
especially at a command. Yeah,
it's like programming a computer, basically.
Yeah.
And they also use harmonic frequencies on television to actually manipulate your neuron pathways. Now, harmonic frequencies can be used to heal. They can be used for good, but they're not used for good on TV. They're used to manipulate your neuron pathways and embed detailed commands once again, so they can trigger those commands later when you hear certain sounds or see certain images. They're basically telling us how to think, what to feel, how to act. If you're watching TV, you're getting programmed. And another thing that happens And I've been hearing this term a lot lately in different interviews we've been watching, listening to, is cognitive dissociation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the brain naturally dissociates when it has something like a trauma or something overwhelming that it just can't handle. Mm-hmm. It kind of steps aside, you know, to protect itself. And this is what's happening on TV with the trauma-based mind control.
Right, and that's where what we're seeing is there's a reason why all of the sex and the violence is being ramped up and has been ramped up since day one. The first television came out in 1924, and ever since then in the movies and in television, actually when it hit the United States even harder was after the Nazis developed the TV further, and then it was introduced heavily in the 50s here in the States. But ever since then, they've been ramping this up, and what we're noticing is by studying trauma-based mind control, which, and I always mention Fritz Springmeier, he's definitely the best, in my humble opinion, the best author to look at towards an explanation of what trauma-based mind control is and what the Illuminati actually is. And what we're finding is that the more you study trauma-based mind control and what the Illuminati satanic families do to mind control their victims, including their own family members, it is paralleled with what we're seeing on TV. So essentially, in a nutshell, you turn the TV on, it puts you into an alpha or even deeper, like theta and delta.
Theta or delta. It gets deeper and deeper the more you watch
it. Right,
the TV.
Which is also what the Illuminati trauma-based mind control does. First, they trance out normally the children because that's their victims normally. They trance them out, and then they abuse them and traumatize them. The TV trances you out, and then the program, okay, listen to the magical spells that we're talking about here, these magic words. The program then dissociates sex and violence in the viewer or slash victim watching the show. And they've ramped all of this up in their abilities to manipulate the mind, as Bonnie said, through the flicker rate, through the higher technologies. Bonnie has some more stuff she can talk about along that line, where there's actually technology out there where there it's not just about the program or the images that you're seeing. The machine itself or the television, your Kindle, your iPad, your smartphone, basically anything with a screen on it is now being used to pulse electromagnetic frequency and manipulate right down to your DNA, like Bonnie was saying. So
yeah, it's incredible.
It is incredible. But it's all researchable. It's all fact. It's all right there. All one has to have is love and care in their heart, which is what the Illuminati's ultimate goal is, to destroy that in human beings to make us like them. As long as you have this care and love in your heart, you're able to go on and research this stuff, and it's right there in the United States Patent Department for anybody to look this stuff up.
A past guest named Mark Passio, who you guys know, he pointed out in an interview a few weeks ago that I'm not sure if the powers that be, these Illuminati families, want us to be like them necessarily. He says they want us to be enslaved.
Mm-hmm. Right. But if you look at who these people are, who the Illuminati is, let's say the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Queen of England, all the archbishops and the Pope and all these type of people who are, a lot of people say, you know, that they're schizophrenic or psychopathic. Sure, their actions are psychopathic, but this all goes down to demonic possession, in my opinion. But what I mean by just like them is they have, not only do they not have care and love in their heart, they do not possess the human capacity for love and care in their heart anymore. And this is what they want to turn everybody else into, basically robots that will do their bidding. And that's not to say that they are also robots, but on some level, each one of them are being controlled. You know, even if you go to what's apparently the highest level, like let's say the president of the corporation known as the United States, Barry Satoru, who's also known as Barack Obama, he has handlers, okay? So, you know, all these people are just at the top of the pyramid. I personally believe that it's not human at the very top. And it's all a matter of control all the way down the pyramid, all the way to the base of the pyramid where you have your soul dyers, your soldiers, and your police, which are like very heavily affected trauma-based mind control victims with left brain damage. And that's also on Mark. Mark has been speaking on this, Mark Passio, for a long time about both left and right hemisphere brain damage and how it occurs and what it means to our society. Just to plug his website for sure is whatonearthishappening.com, and everybody should definitely study Mark Passio.
He really hit it out of the park weeks ago, and I got some great comments from listeners. Now, John, you've done some serious investigative work on mnemonic circles and sigils in regard to the images in television programming and also right. video games and other visual entertainment. And as Bonnie has pointed out, things have ramped up a lot more. I know what you're talking about. I saw when they were coming into television graphics before the digital conversion. And I always thought that these were the interiors of a camera or the lens, and mm-hmm. they were just taking it apart and, you know, geeking out in a way and in an illustrative way to show you what's inside a camera, the lens, and the working parts. But it's not necessarily that. Can you explain what's going on here?
Right. Well, with sigil magic, individual shapes actually speak through the eye to certain aspects of the subconscious. That's how sigil magic works. And it's been a long time now that magicians, especially these dark magicians, have figured out specific shapes that actually take charge of the subconscious mind and control it. Bonnie's going to be able to speak a lot more about that and how it relates to Solomon's Key. But just to put it in a nutshell, what a sigil is any shape or form that the magician makes himself and or herself. They give that sigil, that form, a particular meaning and intention and energy. And this could be a single sigil for a single magician, and they are the only ones who put this intention into it. They're the only ones who know what this sigil means, but it still gives it power. And I'll explain that in just a second, that it's scientifically proven that it has power. But then there's other sigils where you'll have a magician make the sigil and put it out into the public's eye, and everybody understands what that sigil means, and they all energize that sigil with their own intention and meaning. And a good explanation of that is if I tell everybody who's listening to this to just put their finger in the air and make a swoosh mark in the air, without saying another word about that swoosh mark, most of the people hearing my voice are going to think of Nike. And that's how powerful that is. And incidentally, that swoosh mark is actually a representation of the ring of Saturn, which is a whole other can of worms we probably won't have time for in this interview. But the Saturn death cult is what this all boils down to. So a sigil is basically a shape that has energy or intention. It means something, and it can mean that for a lot of people to all give it power or just on an individual basis. And our language and all languages are sigil magic. If you think about it, we're, as young children, we're all put in schools, these institutions, and we're taught to spell with these, and there again is the magic language. We're taught how to spell with these sigils. We're given an English language. We're given 26 sigils. Each sigil has its own specific shape, its own specific frequency, that is, we pronounce it a certain way. And you string along these sigils in a certain configuration to create spells or to spell a sentence. So that's all fine and well. People understand what the sigils are now and that all languages, all written languages, are sigil magic. But does that have power? Now, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. Everybody, many of your viewers or listeners will already know about Dr. Masaru Emoto and his work with freezing water that has sigil magic written on it, where he'll take two beakers of pure water and put the sigil hate written across one of them and the sigil love written across the other one, put them in separate places for a time, go back, freeze the water, and over again. That is to say that this is a repeatable experiment, and anybody listening to this can do it themselves. And over again, the hate water, the water that has the sigil hate on it, will come up really nasty looking under a microscope. And the love water will be symmetrical and beautiful, and you can tell a distinct difference between the two. Now, taking that one step further, let's remember that language the letters that we see that are used to spell with are sigil magic and speak directly to the human subconscious mind. This is why there is advertisement, like advertisement billboards everywhere you go. They play on the human mind. They play a difference in how you think about things. I'll throw a couple of them out there for you, and then we can move on. But one really big one is Sunkist, let's say, okay? Sunkist. Everybody thinks that when they grab a can of Sunkist and open it up, they're drinking something named Sunkist. Look at the can next time. Look it up on the internet. Type in Sunkist. Look at their logo. The logo doesn't say Sunkist. It says Sinkist. S-I-N-K-I-S-T. Sinkist. You have to look at it again. They've been fooling us for decades with this. Sinkist. So they talk to your subconscious with it. And another big one is the monster drink. Many people are aware by now, thanks to our friend Freeman at FreemanTV.com. Freeman kind of blew the lid off of this and thought, that's strange that the monster drink logo has three claw marks. What animal just has three claws, you know? So it's strange. So he looked into it, and sure enough, those aren't claw marks. They're representing claw marks, but if you look at it, they are the letter Vav in Hebrew, which is an ancient magical sigil language, Hebrew. And Vav is the three letters you see there, and Vav, and all letters in Hebrew have a numerical equivalent. And, you know, it wouldn't take you too hard to guess this, but the number equivalent for Vav is six. So the Monster Drink logo is actually 666. Plus, it says the word monster across the can. And if writing the word love or hate on a glass of water produces an effect to the water inside the jar, what do we think writing 666 and monster on a can does to the liquid inside that can? Okay? And so just putting that out there for everybody to think about. But the most important thing that we're trying to get people aware of is this how the sigil magic is being used in the mnemonic circles. That's really the crux of our investigations right now. And everybody can go to our website, awakenvideo.org, and watch the short 40-minute docuvid that we put together called Global Epidemic Exposed Television Sigil Magic. You watch that, and I guarantee you'll start seeing these mnemonic circles everywhere.
Awakenvideo.org is your website. And we've had Dr. Konstantin Korotkov on to talk about his experiments as well. And he did something similar to what Dr. Emoto had done, and he measured intent in water.
That's right.
It's measurable. He also measured orgone energy using water, and that's measurable as well. Water being the universal substance. Mm-hmm. He said, in the universe, the most sensitive substance in the universe. That's what he said.
It's the living water. That's right.
If intent is going to be measured, I guess you would want to use the most sensitive substance in the universe. And where we are, you know, they say we're around 70%, 80% water in our bodies,
mm-hmm.
which is another powerful aspect of this in terms of what we're thinking and the way we think. And the power of our intention. Now, Bonnie, could you give us a background on the research on the Secret Seal of Solomon? And what is that, and how does it relate to the sigils and mnemonics?
Sure. Well, there is a series of ancient magical books that were written by King Solomon, who was king of the Israelites from 970 to 930 BCE. He was a rabbi and a magician and pretty famously known, and the Freemasons look up to King Solomon as a spiritual guide, actually. So these books written by King Solomon are still used by magicians today, including the dark magicians within the Illuminati families. And these are the same people who decide what the masses are getting programmed with. So one of the books in the series, called The Lesser Key of Solomon Goetia, describes 72 demons. Now, these demons are believed to control the human brain, specifically the subconscious human brain. They also believe not only do they control the human brain, but all of creation and manifestation. So they're pretty important in their work. Now, one of the requirements for this magic to work is that the victim be in a trance state so their subconscious mind can easily be programmed. So there's television for you. How is this related to the mnemonic circles? Well, each demon has its own sigil. And these sigils are used in TV programming within the mnemonic circles. It's all connected. The mnemonic circles, John and I took videos of these circles, and we have taken them apart frame by frame on our computers. And you will find all kinds of symbols and numbers.
Here's something for all the esoteric-minded folks out there who understand how the spirit connects with the apparent physical world. When we started studying that, and we're like, oh my gosh, this looks just exactly like the QR code. You know, that's the box code that you see in magazines and on billboards that your, you know, quote-unquote smartphone can take a picture of and it somehow reads it.
Oh, yes.
Well, yeah, so we started investigating the QR code, and the QR code uses an algorithm that's called Reed Solomon. That's pretty weird, but, you know, that's just another connection. That's because there's a Dr. Reed, R-E-E-D, and a Dr. Solomon who got together and made the algorithm for the QR code. But I just thought that was a little interesting tidbit.
So the secret seal of Solomon, that's actually one particular magical pentacle. That is the magical pentacle that King Solomon used to imprison and trap these 72 demons and keep them in a brass vessel. But there are many of these magical pentacles in King Solomon's books. And like I said, magicians around the world still use this magic, and each demon has a sigil. And these demons are actually from hell. And King Solomon claimed, of course, that he was given these names by God. And around the world, they are actually used for different reasons. And there is a word called the Shemha Mephoresh. This is a Hebrew word derived from Bible code. And this also contains the 72 demons, although they call them names of God. So this is widely known, and each of these demons, they have a sigil, and the sigils are used to speak to the subconscious mind, and that's part of what they're doing with the mnemonic circles.
Yeah, the Sistine Chapel is laid out according to these 72 demons. And we also know further, I mean, you can go as deep as you want to and all this stuff, we also know further that the Masons build these things like the Sistine Chapel and all churches as capacitors. And that's why they all have the antenna on top of them, and it's a place for everybody to go together. Forget about I don't have it in front of me about the word church, but even the word church breaks down to a meaning that essentially means to give away your power. And so you get all these people inside these churches praying, getting their spiritual energies up, and then it's siphoned off because it's the building itself is a capacitor.
There's so much word magic out there. You can learn a lot just by looking at your own language. The word spell. Well,
it's right there.
We go to school and we learn how to spell.
Yeah. In the institution.
You know, regarding the satanic aspect of it, Mark Passio, who was on the show a couple of weeks ago, he revealed a lot in this interview that we had with him, and he was a former priest in the Satanic Church and had said the intent of that church is to enslave human beings. And you all had talked about Jay Parker, who grew up in a satanic family. And can you talk about his work and why Mark and Jay's story and their contributions are important?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mark really does a great job on a lot of levels. There's no way to even begin to cover everything he does. Of interest to me in particular is his work in natural law, which is super imperative that people understand that we have been buried in man's law so far that we've basically given up our actual humanity, our own power, and turned our authority over to others who definitely, obviously, at this point, do not have our best intention in mind. Jay's work is wonderful because Jay came forward like several of the other former Illuminati ritual abuse survivors. And there is now, just to put it out there, there is now a satanic ritual abuse survivor organization across this country. So this is something huge. Jay Parker is far from being the only one who's come forward, but he's very public with it, which is great for people like us so that we can take what he says and make the parallel with the rest of the society, and we can see such an absolute mirroring of what these Illuminati satanic families are doing and what's happening inside of the average American home. Jay is actually, when we heard him speak at the Free Your Mind Conference 2 in Philly, Jay was talking about a spinning device. Now, this is a mechanical device that would spin and trance out the kids. They would use the spinner against their own children now and put them in a trance with it prior to the satanic ritual abuse to partition their mind. So we see that parallel with the mnemonics that Bonnie and I have been trying to bring out to the surface. Jay Parker's work is extremely important for everybody to pay attention to.
In one of your interviews, it was with Janice Barcello, you were talking about in Newtown, Connecticut, where that deadly shooting took place, there are a lot of people involved in the dark occult. And can you talk more about that and maybe the connection to the school shooting and other enclaves like that around the country?
Sure. That is, back to Jay Parker again, that's one of the things that Jay revealed is that, now was he in Delaware?
Arden, Delaware,
okay? And this town that he grew up in is about, according to Jay, is about 90% satanic Illuminati, and they have about 10% there on purpose just to have some type of, bring some type of normality there so that they don't look like such a freakish town with them all being
10% normal people.
And it's now very clear that Newtown, again, the words, Newtown, Connecticut, connect, I cut, okay? This town is a major hub that's in documentation from the Church of Satan. We have that documentation ourselves that surfaced right after the PSYOP of Sandy Hook took place. Newtown, Connecticut is named by the Church of Satan as a major hub on the East Coast. So Newtown, Connecticut, is, we believe, is one of these towns where it's about 90% practicing satanic Illuminati, which means that it's just full of MK Ultra, basically satanic robots. We see that with these alleged parents who are certainly definitely involved in this. Heard all of this probably before, but if you go to awakenvideo.org, to our website, we have a couple of really good posts up there about the Sandy Hook PSYOP, and we absolutely believe that no shooting took place whatsoever, except for possibly the shooting of the mother. Lanza mother may have been actually shot. We're not even positive about that, but the so-called 26 children, the victims, were actually all of them alive and well at Super Bowl 47 after the Sandy Hook PSYOP happened, and they've all been identified, and people just have to go study that and see what it's all about. All of these are PSYOPs from 9/11, Sandy Hook, Boston bombing, LAX, you name it. These are all PSYOPs. I'm not saying that none of them ever have blood, but this particular one with the Newtown, Connecticut, really study it. Very suspicious how not a single one of these so-called, in quotes, their parents ever shed a single tear. There's not a single photograph. We have Robbie Parker smiling as he comes out, joking around, and then when he sees the TVs on or the cameras rolling, he does what is known in acting school. He uses acting principles to get himself into character. And then he's seen again in another photograph smiling at the funeral itself in the back of the limo. These people are absolutely criminals. I'll call out Lieutenant Vance of the Connecticut State Police Department. That man is a criminal, and he should be locked up underneath the prison somewhere. Okay, these people have perpetrated a PSYOP against the rest of America, and they're using the mass media and the technology that we've been talking about, which keeps people in a trance-like state, and they're using this advantage over these people to perpetrate this and make these things that are not real seem like reality through the manipulation of the mass media. But indeed, these people are, every one of these so-called parents, Robbie Parker, all of them that are involved, the coroner, Dr. Carver, Kay Carver, the coroner, yeah, all of these people need to be locked up. And that's my opinion, but that's what we've come to believe by really intense research into that.
Thanks for that, John. I wanted to ask, how has the digital TV conversion affected the hypnotic trance?
What we know is this is something that we're researching now, but the new digital signal that came out, and everybody had to have their TVs converted, and, you know, it was a big deal. Everybody had to do this, and even if you didn't have enough money to get a new digital TV, you'd get a coupon for a free converter box. So everybody had to do this. So it was mandatory. And it seems like what they're doing is this digital TV signal is working in conjunction with something called the SSSS, the Silent Sound Spread Spectrum, which is a technology that works in conjunction with HARP and Gwen towers and cell phone towers. It seems like what they're actually doing is they can measure the frequency of certain emotions. And, of course, they target emotions like anger, anxiety, sadness, fear, you know, all those lower-based, low-level emotions. They can copy the frequency of these feelings, and then they can broadcast them through the air. And these frequencies are going through our bodies, so they can make us actually feel sad or angry or upset by using this technology. And with the specifically with the TV, what they're doing with the digital signal, they are pulsing electromagnetic frequencies from the monitors. And I have a patent here that was granted to a man named Hendrikus Lou. The patent is U.S. patent number 6506148. It is called Nervous System Manipulation by Electromagnetic Fields for Monitors. This man, Hendrikus Lou, also has a nickname. It's Who. So it's called Who Lou. Now, he was given this patent in 2003. Then in 2008, Hulu.com became available, which is a place you can go. Anybody can go and watch their favorite television programs in digital format for free. Now, this technology, what they're doing is pulsing a certain frequency near 0.5 hertz or 2.4 hertz to produce a response within the human nervous system. So they are affecting our nervous system this way, and also embedding information into our subconscious minds. So the digital signal seems to be part of this new technology that they're using to use frequency to manipulate us in just every way you can imagine, basically.
Okay. I wondered about that, and I know that some shows talk about this, these patents on the station, but only in the context of surveillance and not what you described here. A recent story caught my attention. Demonstrations against the grip on San Francisco held by wealthy technology workers took a personal turn on Friday, with protesters taking aim at a Google lawyer they say personifies the tensions stirred by abundant tech money. Protesters told Reuters they will increasingly target individuals as a part of a strategy to draw attention to the growing divide between rich and poor in San Francisco, a rift widened by a tech industry boom that is inflating rents and exacerbating social problems such as evictions. Well, this story made me think of the physical world that supports the massive virtual world that humans are plugged into right now, and how that virtual world is being shaped by the dark occult with sigils, mnemonics, as you mentioned in your research. And here it is manifesting into something criticized as an exclusive force, gentrifying communities and displacing working class people. Now, I'm not saying all tech workers are involved, but it makes me think of when
Mark Zuckerberg, CEO of Facebook, usually dressed down in a t-shirt, scruffy clothes with an aw shucks thing going on, intentionally disarming. Well, you know, not so. Some listeners might recall that on a television show somewhere in Europe, I think, he started to sweat profusely, and the host asked him a couple times to take off his hoodie. Finally, he removed the garment, and the host happened to glimpse the inside of the jacket, which revealed an occult-like diagram sewn into the liner. So there's a reason for that unassuming, dressed down, I'm just a regular guy look. It is to counter that I'm a billionaire lord of total surveillance. It just made me think of they're in it, and here we have the physical world responding here to this massive virtual world that human beings are plugged into.
Yeah, you put it nicely by saying that, and the evidence that people are plugged into a fake world is, and that they're tranced out and can't see the real world, is, let's say, like the chemtrails. We all know what that feels like, to be awake and aware of the chemtrails, and it's horrific now. You know, it's like, oh my God, how could people not see this? I mean, it's down to ground level on most days now. It's hazy at ground level, which is the chem being pushed down a ground level. And how could everybody not see that? It's right in front of your face. How could you not get it? This is the answer. And that's why I say again, these TV mnemonics are a global epidemic. If the television sets were all to be shut off all at the same time, let's say on the same day, all TV sets are completely shut down, immediately this reality would begin to change. And it would begin to change towards a positive end, I believe.
Bonnie, you mentioned that the viewer is brought in and out of a hypnotic state to induce an even deeper trance. Could you explain that process?
Yeah. Well, if an individual is placed in a trance and then brought out of the trance, then put under again, and this is done many times in succession, the hypnosis goes to deeper and deeper subconscious levels. The more you watch TV, the deeper the state of hypnosis becomes. So the information programmed into the subconscious mind can be at a very deep level. So the information, it's undetectable by the conscious mind. You would never even be aware of it. We have seen countdowns used at the opening of many news broadcasts. This brings the viewer into a deeper level of trance before they are programmed with the so-called news, which is basically what the Illuminati programmers want you to believe and help them manifest.
Yeah.
And people are sucked into these terrible news stories that, you know, most of them aren't even true. They're just made up. And these people get sucked into it, and they focus their attention on them, and they give them their energy. And they're literally helping to create them. They're helping to manifest this dark reality. So the count up and the count down thing, that is to bring people into a deeper and deeper state of hypnosis. And the more you watch TV, the deeper this state goes, and the easier you go into a deep state of hypnosis.
Yeah.
And for people who watch TV every day, they are in a constant unconscious state their whole lives. It's enough to keep them in a trance state their whole lives.
You know, a lot of people have seen now the thing on, on the internet, where somebody got volunteered for this. They were hypnotized, and the experiment was to see if somebody, just some Joe off the street, could be hypnotized and be controlled into shooting somebody. I don't know if you've seen that yet or not, but
no.
It's pretty popular. So they do. They hypnotize this guy, and they bring him into this venue at some type of talk that a guy is giving. And sure enough, they give the code word or the go signal or whatever to this hypnotized individual, and he walks up fully thinking that he's going to shoot this guy and pulls out a gun that he doesn't know is unloaded, but begins to pull the trigger while pointing it at the speaker. So that was proven that you know, anybody could be hypnotized, and the old idea that somebody under hypnosis wouldn't do anything that they're not normally comfortable with when they're conscious, that's total BS. People can be programmed to do anything. So my point is, if any old hypnotist can do this to any Joe off the street, what do you think the best, most technically advantaged hypnotist in the world could do to people? And that is the TV. So what could the TV do to these? As Bonnie said, if everyone or the average viewer victim is watching 4.5 hours a day, they are walking around in a hypnotic trance state 24/7 if they're doing that. What are they being programmed with? What is acceptable to them?
If everyone stopped watching TV, we would take this planet back.
Immediately.
That's what I think.
Yeah. I believe that, too.
Yeah, if people would wake up, come back to their senses, and just think about what's really important in life, things could turn around. Our subconscious minds are very powerful, and they manifest our reality. The subconscious mind is in charge of our five senses, our perceptions of life. They come from the subconscious. The subconscious takes care of about 90% or more of our bodily functions. It's a pretty big deal. So if you are not permitting your subconscious mind to be programmed by the television, then you are able to be your true creative whole self. You can actually make your own decisions.
Bonnie Jean Mitchell and John Mitchell, I want to thank you for a wonderful interview here. And can you tell listeners how to reach you if they want to get in contact?
Absolutely. Thanks. Thank you too, Jeff, so much for this opportunity to get this out there. Again, we're at awakenvideo.org. There's an email link there. It's bonnieandjohn@awakenvideo.org. That's Bonnie, A-N-D-J-O-H-N, at awakenvideo.org. And, of course, we really highly recommend that everybody, it's right on the front page, that everybody watch the documentary Global Epidemic Exposed, Television Sigil Magic, so that everybody can know for a fact that the television isn't there for entrainment, entertainment. It is a weapon and is being used against your mind.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.